All right, let's go right on into chapter 3. Read, woe. Now this chapter continues, I want to say that, with the thought of, I am against thee in 2:13. I'd underline that if you want to. And I am against thee. And we carry that thought right on through. And it begins, this begins with woe. Woe to Nineveh. That is called, notice what it's called, the bloody city. The whole city was to be blamed for the killing of innocent people. They were accused to lies and robberies and never stopped. Woe unto the bloody city. It is full of lies and robberies. Taken from the poor is the robberies. Taken from and wealthy people getting wealthier. Now this isn't just Nineveh as we think. This is the whole world systems. And it's even happening right here in the United States. It isn't an odd thing right here. Poor people are getting poorer, rich people are getting richer. They say it's going to trickle down. And then never has trickled down to the poor people yet. It just goes in deeper into the pocket of the rich people. This is the way things are being run, not only here, but all over the world. In verse 2, the noise of a whip and the noise of the rattling of the wheels. And of the prancing horses, and of the jumping chariots, the horsemen lifted up both the bright sword and the glittering spear, and there is a multitude of slain, and a great number of carcasses, and there is none end of their corpse. They stumble upon their corpse. What a description of the condition at that time. I think this describes the means of the ways that they would enter into the city and take it. The pride of the great number of war equipment and the noise as they enter would bring fear to anyone at that time. Notice the sound of the horse's whip as a chariot wheels rolled over the cobblestone streets. The prancing horses with riders armed with swords and gleaming in the sunlight. How great this was. And there was a multitude slain when this city was taken. So many that it can't even be numbered, lying around in the streets as the chariots, wheels, and the horses' hoofs ran over the corpses as they lay in the street. That's the description that we have here. Now, the reason this is described for us is so we can see the horror of the flesh when given power to kill. Now, we apply this thought to the end time in the last days. What is going to happen when the Antichrist has the power to kill? Will he show any mercy? No, not any more than Saddam did. He showed no mercy to people. They found that grave not too long ago. And how many people they find in that grave? Thousands, wasn't it? Yes. I don't remember how many. But can we just imagine the horror of all of this? How terrible it will be during the tribulation time when the flesh has power to kill. With no mercy whatsoever. It's going to be terrible. This will be the ways of the Antichrist, I say. But it's also the ways of the flesh in general. In Romans 3, we have the indictment against the whole human race. And I think one of the indictments there, and I believe it's verse 15 or 16, but it says, their feet are swift to shed blood. That's the whole human race. Now I look around right here in town in the United States, and this guy don't think a thing about being a sniper and killing several people on the freeway, shooting them through the windows of their car, shooting them at a filling station. They don't have no remorse whatsoever in doing it. Things today are getting worse all the time. Destruction and misery are in their ways, we read. And the way of peace have they not known. How terrible. And then again, it says there is no fear of God before their eyes. Now, God describes all this in Romans 3 to tell us that this, in view of the things that he's telling us here, he's going to, in the midst of all of this, he's going to save believers in Judah. And God is going to have a remnant that he's going to take care of in Judah. Verse 4, let's read 4 and 5. Because of the multitude of the whoredom of the well-favored harlot, the mistress of witchcraft, that selleth nations through her whoredom, and families through her witchcraft. Behold, I am against thee, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will discover thy skirts upon thy face, and I will show the nations thy nakedness, and the kingdoms thy shame." Now they're seen as a beautiful harlot. This word harlot here could also be translated a temple prostitute. This was women that gave themselves to the temple gods and become prostitutes for no money. All the profits of their prostitution went to the heathen idols. Now this was a common thing, and this is what God hates, though. It's all contrary to God's purpose. This views the religious systems of the world that would induce nations to worship idols, which would later end up being worshiping the image of the Antichrist in the last. In the 17th chapter of Revelation, the first five verses, maybe we ought to turn over and read that, we have a description of this prostitute. We probably have read it before. "And there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials or bowls, and talked with me, saying, Come up hither, and I will show thee the judgment of the great whore," or the great prostitute. Religious prostitute is what she is, "that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk of the wine of her fornication." Religious intoxication. How many people are intoxicated with religion without Christ and have nothing? This is a temple prostitute, is what we're seeing here. They get no money. They declare poverty. "So he carried me away in spirit," or should be in spirit, in the spirit. John's spirit was taken out of his body and carried into the wilderness. "And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns, and the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and color, decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand of abomination and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, Mother of Harlots, the Abomination of the Earth." Now this is religious systems in the last days. Many commentaries say this is Catholicism. I don't agree with that. I think it might be head by Catholicism, but it's not only the mother, but it's the children of the mother too, as well as the mother. And so she's called Mystery the Great, the mother of other harlots, an abomination of the earth. So we have religious systems here that is playing the part of a harlot. So this is the means that God is going to come in and destroy. He hates this. Their pride is in their beauty. And it is even today, in their beauty. When we think of the scarlet and the colors that we just read of there, precious stones, the pearls, all of these things speak of artificial value and artificial beauty. But God doesn't see them in this way. He sees them as ugly, drinking of filth. There's a verse in Proverbs 2, verse 10, says, "When wisdom enters unto thine heart, knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul. Discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things." Here's the only deliverance there is from all of this filth, is the wisdom of God. There isn't any other. Then it says, "Who lead the path of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness." There's people who left these things. And then we should read, "Who rejoice to do evil and delight in the frowardness of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and they forward in their path, to deliver thee from the strange woman and from the stranger that which flattereth with her words, which forsaketh the guide of her youth and forgetteth the covenant of her God. For her house inclined unto death, her path unto the dead. None that go unto her return again, neither take they hold of the paths of life, that thou mayest walk in the ways of a good man and keep the paths of the righteous." There's only two roads to go. There's a wide road and a narrow road, the good road and the bad road, the religious road and the spiritual road. And God's people had to make that choice. But these had a multitude of whoredom of the well-favored harlot. Everybody liked her. So will they in the last days, like the well-favored harlot. How many people realize that religion is adulterous? Not very many. And you can't tell them either. They don't understand. But God says it's so. He says you're bringing in witchcraft, the mistress of witchcraft. She sells the nations, all these things, the witchcraft. She's selling herself to the nations and to the world, how powerful they are, and families through her witchcraft. How many families are destroyed spiritually by falsity and corruption in the religious systems of this world today? Verse 5, behold, I am against thee, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will discover thy skirt upon thy face. Or I will pull her skirt over her head and expose her for what she really is. Not a nice person, but a convincing old witch, what she is. I don't know, she don't look so old, I guess. But the nations will see her fall one of these days and laugh her to shame, and she'll hear thee nothing. In verse 6, I will cast abominable filth upon thee, and will make thee vile, and will set thee as a gazing stock. How great this is. God will cast them into that which they are willing to go. Cast abominable filth upon them. Well, they don't mind abominable filth if that's what they've been in for years, do they? So this is what he's going to do. Idolatry is abominable and detestable in the sight of God. It's not detestable to the world. They're used to it. So he's going to let them have their way. Now, in the doing so, he's going to bring in the Antichrist and the false prophet. And the image of the Antichrist is called the abomination that maketh desolate in Daniel 11, 12 through there. Matthew 24 calls it the abomination of desolation. But that's what they want. That's what they're going to get. The nations had drawn Israel into this abominable systems. And this is what God was judging. Now God cut off the Israel and he brought in the church. And now the church is in that abominable system. And they're going to be judged the same way, same time. You would think that when Israel looked around and saw what God was doing to their idols, that they wouldn't want their idols. But they just wasn't able to tell the difference. Well, we look today and they haven't learned their lesson even yet, have they? Because the gods of this world is still worshipped by Israel. What is the greatest God in this world? What is the greatest God that Satan uses to attract people in this world? It's a green God. Money, right? I saw a sign at the automobile place that says, money talks. Well, so will the abomination of desolation talk, too. This is a terrible. People love riches, and they haven't learned that the God of this world uses so many things to draw people away from the truth. These are all gods, and they're still being worshipped. But one day, Israel will see Jesus. They'll see their Messiah, and they're going to weep and cry for what they've done for him. In the book of Jeremiah, chapter 4, verse 1, if thou wilt return, O Israel, saith the Lord, return unto me. And if thou wilt put away thine abominations out of my sight, then thou shalt not remove. Also, this idolatrous system will be exposed and put on exhibition for all the world to see how false that they were before he destroys them. Read all this in the 17th and 18th chapter of Revelation. How terrible the time will be when, you see, the religious system will be destroyed. Then the Antichrist will pick up on the religious attitudes of people and proclaim himself to be God. Because everybody likes to be religious, you know. The whole world likes to be religious in a sense. So it's going to be used. In verse 7, and it shall come to pass that all they that look upon thee shall flee from thee, and say, Nineveh is laid waste. Who will bemoan her? When shall I seek comfort for thee? Nineveh, as we said before, represents the end time world powers that has been the ruination of millions of people over the years. And now she's going to be in a heap. We said before, cities in the feminine gender, churches in the feminine gender, the false churches in the feminine gender. So when we talk about feminine side, the world religious system and the world political system will run hand in hand together. And when we talk about the religious system, it has ruined the lives over the years of millions of people, just actually destroyed them. And they're going to be held accountable for that. And then we read in Revelation 18 that she will be destroyed. Her repulsive look on her, how terrible it'll be. Who will bemoan her or comfort her? And the answer to that is absolutely no one will comfort her at the end of her life. Art thou better than populace? No, that was situated upon among the rivers and had the waters round about it, whose rampart was the sea, and her walls was from the sea. Ethiopia, Egypt were her strength, and it was infinite put. And look, yet was she carried away and went into captivity. I lost my place here. Verse 10. She went into captivity. Her young children were dashed in pieces at the top of the street, and they cast lots for her horrible men, honorable men, and all her great men were bound in chains. Thou also shalt be drunken, thou shalt be hid, thou shalt seek strength because of the enemy. Let's take a break here, and then we'll talk about these verses from 8 to 11. We just read verses 8 to 11, and in these verses, God is talking directly to Nineveh, and at this time, Nineveh thinks that they're indestructible, and God refers to his power in Egypt as before. No was a city in Egypt on the banks of the Nile Delta, sitting in the fork of two branches, also known as the No-Ammon branch. This city was well protected. They had a great army. They had high walls. And who would think that they would fall? But no, fell. Anyway, and then we have Ethiopia as an example, and Put and Libya. Now, all of these were of Cush, or from Ham, and were there to help her, but they weren't much help. Who can help when God is there to destroy? You know, they couldn't do too much, could they? And in verse 10, we have the word, starts with the word yet. Yet she carried away. Yet was she carried away. And we could translate the word yet as even though all of this help came from Ethiopia and Libya and so forth, God still prevailed and destroyed from the youngest to the oldest were taken into captivity. The young children were dashed in pieces at the top of the street, and they cast lot for the honorable men, and the great men were bound in chains. Now, if God could do this to Egypt, can he do it to Nineveh too? If God could do this to Egypt, can he not do it to Rome or to Antichrist or whoever it might be? When God gets ready to destroy, he destroys, and no one is there to help. In verse 12 and 13, we read, all thy streets all thy strongholds shall be like fig trees with the first ripe figs. They shall be shaken, they shall even fall unto the mouth of the eater. Behold, thy people in the midst of thee are women. The gates of the land shall be set wide open unto thine enemy. The fire shall devour thy board. And this describes her condition as drunken men stagger, not knowing where they're going or what they're doing. They fall down and no one can see them, brought into absolute total weakness in every way. The second thing we read here is the very best, like the overripe figs, fig tree. A little shaken, a little wind, and all is falling down. And all the eater has to do is come and pick them up. Who's the eater here? That's the enemy, isn't it? Come in, and all he had to do was to take it, consume them. Then the third thing we read in this is the women were not trained to war. Therefore, they were not much to protect. When the enemies came, the gates did not hold them back. They just came in like there was no resistance whatsoever. Verse 14 through 17 goes together. Draw thee water from the siege. Fortify thy strongholds. Go into clay and tread the mortar. Make strong the brick hill. There shall the fire devour thee. The sword shall cut thee off. It shall eat up like the cankerworm. Make thyself many as the cankerworm made thyself many as the locusts. Thou hast multiplied thy merchants above the stars of heaven, and the cankerworm spoileth and flieth away. Thy crown are as the locust, and thy captains as the great grasshopper, which camped in the hedge of the cold in the cold day. When the sun ariseth, they flee away, and their places is not known where they are. This tells us, these verses tells us that any self-effort won't do very much good in that day. They will try, but they won't. They can't preserve life. They can store fresh water, as we read. Fortify our strongholds. Make a lot of brick. Everybody able to build stronger and walls, but it'll all be in vain. It won't help much. But everything they do will be empty. And in verse 15, there are three things said of the enemy. First thing is fire shall devour thee. And history tells us that the king, whose name was Sardon Apollos, I don't know whether I'm pronouncing that right or not, but he was the king at that time. And according to the history, when he saw Nineveh was fallen, he took his family into the palace, set fire to it, and died. And this made way for the city to burn to ashes. The second thing we see here is that the enemy armies were now able to come into the city without any hindrance from all directions to come in. And then we read in the third thing, they come in like canker worms. And I think this has a thought of the multitude of the armies that will devour it. In verse 17, you notice, let me find it here. I can't find the word I want. Anyway, after heaven, in verse 16, after heaven, the stars of heaven, we have a colon. And this changes the thought of the word cankerworm. The number, it has the same meaning, but the number of the character of Nineveh. It doesn't matter how many are the ability of the people's purpose, but God's purpose will be carried out regardless of what men think or what men are going to do. God's going to have it. And so the multitude of the merchants above the stars of heaven. Then we read, the cankerworm spoileth and flieth away. That's the way the enemy came in to Nineveh. And then in 18, read, thy shepherds slumber, O king of Assyria. Now, Nineveh was part of Assyria at that time. Thy noble shall dwell in the dust, thy people scattered upon the mountains, and no man gathereth them. The king's shepherds, you see, those are his subjects under him. But they're no help when they're asleep, are they? What good are they when the shepherds slumber? Where do the sheep go? Where do the sheep go when the shepherds slumber? And Proverbs 6 gives us a little thought along that line. It says, yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth. And they want as an armed man. The nobles here are the men of war that will die, and the people scattered, but they'll not escape. In verse 19, there is no healing to thy bruise. Thy wound is grievous. All that hear the bruit of thee shall clap their hands over thee. For upon whom hath not thy wickedness passed continually? So God is telling them here that there's no hope for them. They'll never be rebuilt. The word brood here has the thought of something heard like a rumor. So when they hear of the fall, they're going to be glad and rejoice. The reason for their attitude is the way that they have been treated in the past. There was no nation that had not experienced the wicked ways of Nineveh before that. So when they fell, everybody's going to be happy. Now let's apply this thought back to the Antichrist, and when he falls, God's going to set up a wonderful government, isn't it? And it'll bring joy to the world. But there won't be any joy to the world as long as the system is prevailing.